Some people like to deep clean every Saturday morning. I prefer to spend a few minutes every day keeping things fresh with Lysol. Lysol's disinfecting wipes conveniently tackle surfaces, including remotes, tablets, and smartphones, killing 99.9% of viruses and bacteria. Don't just clean, Lysol clean.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.
Go Wild is a free social community created for and by hunters. This means that unlike mainstream social media, your trophy pictures won't be censored. They're encouraged. As you spend time on Go Wild, you will earn awesome rewards such as gift cards, free swag, and big discounts on brands like Garmin and Vortex. You will even earn $10 just for signing up. Visit downloadgowild.com and sign up today.
You're listening to The Western Rookie, a hunting podcast full of tips, tricks, and strategies from seasoned Western hunters. There are plenty of opportunities out there. We just need to learn how to take on the challenges.
Hunting is completely different up there.
I've harvested 26 big game animals.
You can fool their eyes, but you can't fool their nose.
The 300 yards back to the road turned into 3 miles back the other way.
It's always cool seeing new hunters go and harvest an animal.
I don't know what to expect.
If there's anybody I want in the woods with me, it'll be you.
Welcome back to another episode of the Western Rookie Podcast. I'm your host, Brian Krebs. Today, I've got my good buddy, Bryce Bowser, on the line. And we're just going to talk about a mule deer hunt that we did. Not this last year, but I believe it was the year before. And it was just a fun hunt. It was Bryce's first trip out west. So I just wanted to get him on here and have him share his point of view of how that trip went down, coming from, you know, his extensive whitetail hunting history here in Minnesota and North Dakota, and just kind of what it's like for that first time hunt out west. Bryce, how's it going, man?
Oh, it's going pretty good.
Yeah.
How about you?
Going good. Getting sighted for summer food plot projects, like we were mentioning right before. We just got under contract on a new farm, and so that's been exciting for us. I know you're, well, basically, your brother-in-law has been deep into farm projects for 2 years now. Probably don't see much of him in the summertime anymore unless you go to him. And so that's going to be me here in a short bit.
Yeah, no, that'll be fun.
So Bryce and I, for the listeners, we went to high school together. Didn't really know each other a lot in high school. Bryce was a couple years older, but ironically met back up through a bunch of mutual friends in Fargo, and we became pretty friendly, hanging out, doing the all kinds of volleyball and different stuff. And then eventually, you know, we finally planned a trip out west. Well, it's been 2 years now, right?
Yeah, 2 years. Yeah, back in November 2021.
It was supposed to be Bryce, myself, and the infamous Jeff, the brother-in-law that has more projects than time, and like more projects than time, Jeff got too busy and couldn't come with us.
Yeah, he's definitely got quite the food plots, and just on top of what he's already doing with his actual job and work. That's, I mean, to be able to afford the projects and the hobbies that we do, it's long hours and lots of time, and really eats into kind of your fun times in the or can eat into your fun times during the fall. But
yeah,
you definitely, unfortunately, couldn't come with last or two years ago. But
I think we were, I think part of the problem as well was that we were planning that trip right as he was trying to get under contract on that farm and, you know, making sure everything worked well with clothes, and just wasn't a great time for him to be committing to doing some Western hunting. And so, which was a bummer, probably a good thing for him, because I feel like he would have got a little addicted.
Yeah. No, it's definitely a trip that, I mean, I definitely want to get out there and do it again, but it's definitely, an addicting type of, it's just different than any hunting that we've done, Minnesota, North Dakota, just different style, obviously different species when we were going after the muleys. But yeah, it was definitely a fun trip that I want to get back out after in the next year or so. But
yeah. So I know a fair amount of your hunting history, but give the listeners just a quick rundown of kind of how you got into hunting and maybe how that changed a few years back once you met Jeff and Elena.
So I was big into, I really wasn't big into the whitetail until basically I met Jeff and Elena, and obviously dated Elena, and we just kind of, I mean, really got into the hunting, the whitetails, and I'd done a lot of bird hunting, pheasants, duck, goose, and as soon as I picked up the bow, it was basically, I haven't touched the shotgun since. So I've definitely probably about 4 years now. And I know that first year, I really didn't know what I was doing, but I was out there like almost every day. And that really rolled into doing the shed hunting. And I'd say from doing that, that I learned more about actual whitetail hunting and like kind of your age class of deer, that sort of thing. And I really, and I obviously hunt Minnesota, North Dakota, and occasionally Montana, but yeah, that's, I mean, my hunting in a nutshell, I guess.
Yeah. So when we went on the trip, that was like your second or third, like hard season of deer hunting, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was probably my going into my third, I'd say. And that year I actually tripled that year. I got my Minnesota tag filled, nice little 115, actually right up there, little 8-pointer. North Dakota, you were actually with on that trip, which was kind of just a, well, you've been out one or two times with us bow hunting in North Dakota, and on one of the trips you just happened to be with, and I got my nice over on the wall over there, little 120, high 20s, 8-pointer, and then we went out to Montana, and we're lucky enough to both fill that, those tags, so.
Yeah, the North Dakota whitetail hunt was funny, because it was, I don't think it was opener, but it was opening weekend, and I was doing some stuff back home. I came into town, I had Monday off. I texted Jeff and I was like, hey, you want to go bow hunting? You can pick me up on the way out. And he's like, well, that's not really on the way, but I'll pick you up. And so me and him rode out together. Then you and Elena went, or you went alone, I think. Elena was with the kids. And Jeff texted me and goes, sounds like Bryce shot a buck. And I'm like, no, come on. We're like first hunt in of the season on public land. Like, there's no way it happened that fast, that easy. And he's like, no, I'm pretty sure he shot a buck. And I'm like, well, did he recover it yet? Like, it's not really shot until it's got, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, well, it looks pretty good. And I'm like, awesome. Like, let's go get this thing. Like, that never happens bow hunting for me. First night out, tag out on a great buck.
That was crazy. I actually pulled off a different deer that I was pretty dead set on. I did like a month and a half of scouting this one deer. And hunted him the first 3 days of the season. And the day before the season started, I actually was up with Elaine and Jeff, and it, obviously a different area that they kind of hunt. And so I'd gone up there and did a little scouting, and I saw this deer out, and I was like, you know, I just feel like I should pull off and go after this one. And they thought I was crazy, because, I mean, the first deer I was after was maybe 130s. He just kind of had some cool characteristics, fuse base, G G2 and stuff. And I mean, it would have been a really nice buck, but I just kind of pulled off, and it was just it was really on a whim, because you guys had been out there hunting since like 5 o'clock, and I was actually working with Elena's youngest brother, Sean, who's Jeff's brother. But I was working with him and wasn't really like thinking of hunting that night. And since you guys were up there, I was like, well, we could kind of go scouting quick. And well, I do have the bow in the truck. And we got up there, it was 7 o'clock, and I'm walking out and into the field at 7 o'clock, and sunset's maybe 7:45, and I'm walking into the field. I got out to my spot pretty much just as he kind of was coming out, and I just was lucky that everything lined up then. But yeah, it was definitely a crazy early season experience, that's for sure.
Yeah, I was not expecting. I think I was taking pictures with my camera of like a little spiker as Jeff's texted me that you shot a buck, and I'm like, well, man, I've really picked the wrong spot to go sit. And then,
go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, it wasn't much of a track job. I mean, from where you shot him to where he went down, I don't know, 40, 50 yards maybe?
I was at the point where I was kind of questioning, because I had watched him go into the little marsh where he ended up expiring. And I, from there, thought that he, because he looked back at me right then, and I thought he was just going to continue on. So I was like kind of questioning, where did I hit him? Was it a good shot? Was, you know, a million things go through your mind after you shoot. And lucky enough that we pressed on another 5 or 10 yards, because I was getting to that point where I was like, well, maybe we should back out for the night and come back in the morning. But we stumbled on him like 10 feet later, and yeah, we ended up getting him.
Yeah, it was a great buck. Had the big camera there, so we took some good pictures. Had the whole family there by the time we went after him, so that was fun. And then Jeff carried him out on his back for most of the, what, half mile?
Yeah, that was, I don't know if I'll be doing that anytime soon, but yeah, he threw him up on his shoulders and hiked him out for quite a ways.
Which is funny, because that buck field dressed probably wasn't much lighter than Jeff on the hoof.
No. Right. Yep.
That's pretty good. And so when did you shoot your Minnesota buck that year? Was it with a bow, or was that during the rifle season?
I was close to that particular one like 3 or 4 times with my bow, and I was just kind of on the fence, because he's nice, but he's not like, I mean, when we do our scouting and shed hunting, we're trying to get those 4.5, 5, 6 year olds that, you know, one in a million type deer. But obviously knew the Montana trip was coming up, and I'd been close enough to this one a handful of times. It was actually opening rifle, and he walked by about 9:30 in the morning, and I was able to take him then. But we went on our trip about a week later, something like that.
Yeah, it was a wild fall for me, because that fall I had 10 tags across the West, and I had a fiance that was living, doing residency in Minnesota 4 hours away, and worked every other weekend. So I was like, well, I'll come see you every weekend you're off, and then I'll find time for these 10 tags in the rest of the fall. And so it was busy. I remember getting home like 6 hours, packed, went to bed, woke up. You know, we left in the afternoon, I think. I can't remember what the details are, but I remember it was a short turnaround from our firearm deer camp to heading out to Montana. And I remember us talking all fall, like leading up to that trip, getting ready, kind of talking about, you know, what kind of bucks we were looking for. And I remember you said, well, I'm looking for a 170. And I'm like, well, I would love a 170 too, but I just want to be level with you. We're not going to find a 170. I don't think we're going to find a 170. And you're like, right. Oh, really? Like, that's kind of a bummer. And he's like, well, like that size buck. And I had a deadhead in my office, and I'm like, well, that's like a 125. So if you're looking for that, we'll find that. But it's so hard when you look at mule deer for the first time, because they're shaped so differently. You can't really just look at, like you and I can look at a whitetail and we can be within 5 inches. You can't just assume that on a mule deer, like, oh, that's, you know, like those 130, 140 looks like a 170 whitetail.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's crazy. Definitely different scoring and different just the way they add up the points and stuff. It's just, I don't know. I still don't even understand it, honestly.
Yeah, it gets Western, for lack of a better word.
Right.
And we went to Southeast Montana. It's no secret. It's not a secret spot from what you and I discovered. We were both probably a little too optimistic for what we were going to find. And we knew there was going to be people. We knew there was going to be some pressure. But we figured we could outwork them because we did hunt hard. We didn't slack by any means. But what did you think of just, like, driving out there, finding camp, and, like, that first, like, not even the hunt yet, but just getting there?
Well, I think if anybody hasn't been to Southeast Montana, they should definitely take a trip, because that was definitely, it was almost like a detriment to try to fill your tag at the same time as being in just the landscape, just how pretty it is out there and just crazy. I mean, honestly, you drive 10 miles any direction and landscape just completely changes too. So that part was pretty cool. That was just, it was a detriment, but it was like almost one of those feelings where you're like, I really wish I could just kind of go explore and do all this stuff. And at the same time, you're trying to fill your tag. And then you pull up to every parking spot of every public piece of land around there, and there's 10 vehicles and, and guys all over the place. It's like, well, it's going to be a little tougher than we had anticipated, that's for sure.
Yeah, I remember morning one, we decided we didn't want to walk anywhere in the dark because we've never been here before. Like, let's just walk in, like, first light. That way we're not walking past anything. So we make breakfast and everything, obviously, in the dark, and we got out of our little spot we were camping. And we were seeing so many deer on the main road that we kept stopping to check, like, is that a mule deer? Is that a mule deer? And then it was all private anyway, so we really just burning time. And we decide we're going to go to this. I don't know why we decided we're going to go to this BMA piece. I don't know if it was because I could shoot a cow elk and
there
was some elk in that area.
Yeah.
So we get to the first BMA spot. We park the truck, and I felt like I needed to take on like the role of like not really a guide, but just like the mentor. Of like, this is probably how it's going to go down, and just set expectations. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, Bryce, this is going to be a challenging hunt. I think you were really optimistic, like really excited and eager. And I was kind of cautioning restraint and like, this is going to be tough. Like don't pass something on the first day that you would shoot on the last day. You know, we're not at that. This isn't the hunt to do that. Sometimes you get a tag where it's like, no, I'm going to really be picky and do the hunt justice. This was not that tag. And so I kept telling him that, and Bryce was like, no, I got it. I'm good. I know. Yep. Well, I'm sure. And I'm like, all right, cool. And so we got to that first spot, and I was thinking we were going to have to work hard to find a buck. How long did it take us before we found that first deer?
Well, I just want to say that I feel like you should have probably led on before we even got to that place, saying that you shouldn't pass any buck that you'd shoot on the last day on the first day.
I thought I told you that.
Yeah, not even 5 minutes out of the truck, probably two minutes out of the truck.
We could see the truck, guns for
loaded
sure.
up.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, we could
got
still
the guns
see the
loaded up. Look over this little bluff 200 yards from the truck, and well, there's a nice little 4x4, probably 2-year-old. But anyways, it was like, well, as soon as we had kind of, I mean, we had plenty of opportunities. I at least had plenty of opportunities to take him. I think he gave us 2 or 3 decent angles to actually shoot him. And then we went to the gas station for lunch and ran into the DNR officer. He tells us that we're not going to see any 4x4s. We're going to have a really tough time seeing any decent mule deer bucks, like just in general. And boy, were we kicking ourselves then.
Well, I never...
All worked out, but...
I saw that deer. I saw that first buck. I don't even know if I saw the buck or I saw the doe. I definitely did not see the antlers because you were walking first. And I intentionally wanted you to walk first to try to get first shot, because at this point, I already shot 2 mule deer. And So you saw it and you seemed excited. And I'm like, great, like, let's go after this deer. And we worked that deer for probably half an hour. I mean, right. By the time he went up and over, then we went around and you got set up and mm-hmm. moved down. And I was like, by this point, I'm staying way back because I don't want to blow it for you. And at one point, right. You're set up, like, safety off, looking through your scope.
Oh, I was on him for minutes. And I kept looking back at you because I thought you were looking at him. And I was, like, waiting to see, like, is it a good one? Like, do I pull the trigger? Because I couldn't quite get a good read on him. He had just little baby forks at the top. And I'm like, he's nice, but, you know, we watched too many YouTube videos before he went there. And so he's, not the average size mule deer, but yeah, so it definitely was. I mean, had I done the trip over again, I probably would have taken him just after we kind of got going and the pressure was as crazy as it was, that everywhere had, you know, people at every single parking area on every single entrance that you could go into these public pieces.
Yeah, there was a lot of pressure. I mean, I really thought you were going to shoot that deer based on, like, what I thought I was telling you. Like, don't, mm-hmm. you know, shoot the first thing that makes you happy. Like, no pressure. You can shoot whatever you want on this hunt. I put my earbuds in. I was that confident you were going to shoot the thing that I put my earbuds in, and I was, like, 40 yards away. And then we saw, you know, that you decided to let that one go. You know, we'll find a better one. I'm like, all right, I didn't see it. I have no idea what it was. I couldn't tell how big right. it was. Trust you. Found a little forky back in there. And mm-hmm. then it's like, you know, at that point, we're feeling pretty good. Like 5 minutes out of the truck, found a 4x4, found another little buck. Like, rock solid, right? Mm-hmm. Then we went to that gas station, and the DNR said, it's the worst 3 years of hunting I've ever seen out here. I haven't even seen a 4x4 this year. You're not going to find one. You'll be lucky to see a buck on public. And we're like, way to make us feel good. Like,
boy, did we get crushed.
He was the downer police.
Yeah.
Not putting him in charge of camp morale. What did we do that evening? I mean, we went and checked out some spot. I mean, a lot of the trip, it was our first time to this spot for either one of us. So a lot of the trip was driving around checking areas.
Yep.
And then.
Yeah, we scouted the rest that night, I think. And just tried to kind of get a lay of the land and get things a little more set up at camp and stuff. And
I think that's when that evening is when it really started to dawn on us how much pressure there was going to be on that mm-hmm. that main road where there was trucks everywhere. And every time we tried to go somewhere to scout, there'd be trucks, giant whitetails mm-hmm. off the side of the road in private, but trucks everywhere.
Yeah, the private.
Yeah, that, what was it, like that 158 pointer we almost hit with the truck?
Oh, yeah. There was actually some pretty nice whitetails down there, but
yeah,
all on private.
So we get back to camp that night, and we decide, like, we're going back to kill that buck this morning. Like, we're not taking any chances. Get up super early the next morning, go right back to the spot. Someone beats us there. There's a truck parked. We hope he went right. Turns out he went left. And I thought, hopefully it's been long enough now that you're not super salty about it anymore, but I really thought you were going to rip my head off when I told you we had to back out because that guy was there.
Yeah, I know. It's just one of those things that stinks, but, I mean, what do you do?
Yeah, that did suck. That really did suck that, you know, because the day before we were there, like, hours later, and no one was at that spot. And then mm-hmm. first light, there was already someone rolled up.
Right. Yeah, that's how it goes. Public land. You never know what you're going to get.
Yeah, that was the moral of the story there. It was also super hot that first day and a half, 2 days. I mean, mm-hmm. I was sweating at night. And you said the heater was, like, acting up. And I'm like, fine, so be it. I don't want the heater on. Like, it is way too hot.
Right.
But then finally, we started really having to expand the horizons. I mean, we were burning spots left and right. Couldn't find any deer to mm-hmm. save our life. We couldn't buy a doe, much less a buck we were interested in on public.
Right. Yeah, it definitely got to be pretty sparse as far as anything we were seeing.
Yeah, I think we started bigger and bigger circles, and at one point, like day two or day three, we were just like, you know what? Like, let's just move. Let's just go way off in a different direction. I don't remember. Mm-hmm. I think you were looking at the map pretty hard and like, okay, well, this big X doesn't work. This big X doesn't work. Like, let's try over there. I'm like, dude, there's a lot mm-hmm. of public land over there. Like, it's different country, that's for sure. It's not the right. same stuff we've been hunting where we can't really. Well, wait, we got to back up a little bit. I think it was day two. We were sitting up on a windy ridge, and you almost got trampled.
I think it was day three. That was it. Was when we went to that new area, basically. And yeah, that was like 60 or 70 mile an hour. Like,
no, that was day three. Coming. I'm talking day two.
Oh yeah, yeah. That's what you're. Yeah.
When I met up with okay. those other hunters and was talking to them, and you literally yep. almost got blindsided, like ran over from behind.
Yep. Yep, I was sitting on top of this ridge and a buck and a doe came up and over and nothing crazy big, but I 5 feet away from them and they just up and over the ridge as I'm coming right to them and they went on their merry way. I was like, well, I guess there's actually deer here, but yeah, not the size we're looking for sure. But
well, at that point yeah, in the hunt, were you ready to just like open season on the first legal buck?
I was pretty close. I also get pretty bad attitudes when I start having, you know, the luck we were having and the pressure that we were seeing. It's like, maybe I just need to pull that little itchy trigger finger and get this over with.
You mean the lack of luck we were having? I mean, other than that first deer, that was the end of our luck.
Yeah, on public land at least. I mean, we were seeing them all over private. Driving around, seeing them everywhere, but yeah, not on public.
Yeah, so we went to the completely new area day three. So it was a 4-day hunt. Mm-hmm. We had 4 days to get this done because I had to be back. I can't remember what was going on. I think it was, well, it was Thanksgiving, was it? No, it was a week before Thanksgiving.
I think you had I don't know what you had, but something going on.
I had to get back to the
cities. I had to go down to the cities or something.
I had to get. That was one of the weekends, and we had plans. I had to get to the cities for something. On that Friday. Yep. So we were going to do Monday through Thursday. And this whole time I'm telling Bryce all summer long, like, you know, I think we should go Monday through Thursday because the most pressure is going to be on Saturday and Sunday. Well, mm-hmm. man, if that was how much pressure was Monday through Thursday, I don't even want to see what that unit looks like on a weekend.
No, that was just insane.
And so day three, we knew the weather was going to suck. There was like a front moving in. It was windier than a hurricane. And so we're like, this is probably going to be a big scouting day, right? And so we go to this whole new area. We get there kind of early, right? We did most of the driving at night. We wanted to get there at first light. I mean, the natural way of the habitat, you did a lot. You almost got more use driving than walking for covering mm-hmm. ground and just seeing where deer are. And that was kind of our plan. We were going to drive around until we start seeing some deer, and then we were going to park and walk. And so we see this forky run across. It was a pretty good size fork. I mean, he was obviously a year and a half old, but at least mm-hmm. he was bigger than the one that almost trampled you.
Right.
And this is now we're at 2.5 days of not seeing any deer. And you're like, I look at you and I'm like, you want to shoot him? And you're like, F it. Like, you kind of had that F it mentality at that point. Like, I'm ready to punch a tag and turn this caravan back homeward. And so I let you out. And it was funny because there was not an inch of grass anywhere in this area. Like, it was that dry and grazed. There was no cover.
Mm-hmm.
And so I told you, I'm like, hey, Bryce, if you walk right over the top of that hill, he's going to see you immediately. If I were you and you really want to shoot this deer, I would crawl. And you're like,
yep,
logical, makes sense, got it, I'll crawl. And so you crawl up and over, and then I stay back. So tell us about that, what that little 15 minutes of fame there.
Oh yeah, that nice crawl through the cactuses. Yeah, I hadn't really seen many of those until I put my hand in, you know, a nice plump cactus, and as I'm about to get on the deer to take a shot, and it probably was for a reason, because as soon as I did that, he hightailed it out of there from some other guys that were alongside the road, and Well, at that point, we at least knew, because we had that deer, and I think we had seen another one as we had gotten over that ridge. I don't think it was anything of any crazy size, but it was just at least we were kind of getting into the deer at that point. So we kind of just, from that point, was like, well, all right, we kind of know this might be worth coming back to. I mean,
I remember
obviously our standards were pretty low at that point. So
I was thinking, I'm going to let Bryce shoot first. I'm going to let him shoot whatever he wants. I think he's probably going to shoot faster than I will. Like your bar was probably at that, like, green, everything's green lit right now. I was still kind of at like a yellow, like, yeah, I don't know if I'm ready to shoot a 1 year old buck, but I sure wouldn't want to stand in front of me too long either. And but I remember when you stood up after that stock and turned around and looked at me, I knew something happened because you looked so disappointed in the advice you were given. you walked back to me and you had cactuses in your knees and you had cactuses in your hands and your gloves were full of cactus needles. I bet you still haven't worn those gloves again.
No, I think I've done it one time and still found needles. So yeah, it's, they've been pretty well retired since then.
That one was completely on me. I did not tell you about the cactuses. I figured that it's common sense to look down when you're crawling around out in the west because there's rattlesnakes. And then you happen to also see the cactus when you do that. So I forgot to mention that part. So that part's on me.
Yeah, that was something, that's for sure. I definitely wasn't even, I don't know, because obviously we'd seen them out there, but only thing that was on my mind was crawling up to that deer and getting a little poke at him. And no, that definitely was not going to be as easy as crawling up there. That's for sure.
I was impressed that you kept crawling after you hit the cactus and didn't just say, you know what, this is stupid.
Well, I did stop for a couple seconds, maybe a minute or so, when I ripped the glove off and pulled the needles out of my hand. So that was...
I feel almost guilty because I was standing by the truck. The way the hill went up and over, I was just standing. Nobody could see me. I had my hands tucked behind my bino harness, warming them up. It's kind of windy. I'm just watching this whole thing go down, and there's Bryce up across the bridge getting blasted with wind, crawling through cactuses. Mm-hmm. Hunters bust his deer for him. Just not a swell time. Not a real fun 15 minutes, but you're right. We were starting to see some deer. So the plan was find some deer, park the truck, let's get out. And now at this point, we're like, all right, we need to start splitting up. We need to cover ground. So I think the way it went is I said, all right, you might as well like hit this area because there's two bucks in here that sounds like you would shoot for sure. I'll just let you have that. I'll bump down a ways, see what's over there. I didn't find any. I found a couple sheds and a fox, and that's about it. You know, I was out there shed hunting. And I come around a point, and I just see, you know, the used car salesman balloon going wild up on top of a hill, you know. This is, you know, Bryce is there waving his arms. I'm like, all right, well, something happened. I better get over there. And so, so what happened after we split up that day?
Well, after... After we split up, I basically went over this ridge and kind of walked down this valley, and the wind is just ripping, rolling right up this whole valley, and like it had to have been 60 mile an hour gusts, maybe even more, like to the point where you can't even open your eyelids and like blink is how bad it's coming up there. And anyways, I had like, I mean, obviously had a ridge on one side, ridge on the other, because I was walking down the valley, and I decided to kind of go up and over the one ridge just to check what was on the other side, just because we're in the deer and we'd seen them all morning. And so went over this ridge, and I got 10 feet from the top, and I bumped a buck, a good buck, and it was actually the buck that Brian had ended up taking the next day. But I got down, and this buck was basically walking away from me, and I took, I think, three shots at him. I think I actually took two because one of my rounds misfired or malfunctioned. But I couldn't tell where my bullets were going. All I knew was I wasn't even close to hitting them at 200 yards, which is pretty surprising for I mean, my gun, every other deer I've shot has been just basically fell over. So
well,
I can only think that the
well, to be fair, you jumped him at 10 feet. He ran down the hill. You had to get there. Mm-hmm. By the time you got there, he was walking. But it's still 60-mile-an-hour winds.
Yeah, and 200 yards shooting down at him. And obviously didn't get him. Tried calling Brian, and his phone was, I think it was on airplane mode. So I'm calling you, trying to get either you over there, because you're probably a mile plus away from me, or get back to the truck to grab my other clip, because we weren't really planning on, obviously I didn't really plan too well that I had left my other clips in the truck. And yeah, so ended up meeting up with him, and we tried to go after him. Once I met up with Brian, we went back over to where I had shot from, and I'm like, he's literally walking away, his back legs all messed up. And I mean, it was one of those things that rather, you know, take that deer specifically because he's injured, and, you know, and not only that, the fact that he's, you know, a good buck, and we've literally seen like a handful of forks and that one nice 4x4 that we've actually been hunting. So we didn't end up catching up with him later that night, but.
Well, yeah, because I finally got up to you and I'm like, did you shoot something or what's up? And you're like, and you're breathing heavy. You were running around. You're excited. Yeah. I'm like, dude, there's a big buck in here. Like the biggest buck we've seen so far. And so I'm starting to get interested. And you're like, I shot, but I mean, so, you know, effing windy. And, you know, I ran out of bullets. And I'm like, what do you mean you ran out of bullets? He's like, one was a misfire. Shot twice. And I'm like, well, don't you have spares in your pack? And he goes, no. And I'm like, well, like, you got to throw in a spare box of bullets in your backpack. But I had some, and I'm like, well, we could walk back to the truck, but this buck was behaving, we were both confident. Like, he went into this draw. It's a washout draw, like one of those flat ones with like a 10-foot drop into the bottom, and he should be like in the first cut. Like, he should be right there. He was hurting. He wasn't moving fast. Mm-hmm. And so I'm like, well, you mind if I just go in after him? Like, I got ammo. We're right here. We don't have to wait. And so you were like, well, sure, I guess. I mean, I kind of wanted to shoot him, but go for it. And so I start walking. I, you know, walk, crawl, get to the spot. I'm starting to walk around this thing. And I felt like I had the very wrong rifle for this whole operation. Because I have a 13.5-pound chassis rifle with a 28.5-inch barrel plus a 2-inch brake. My scope is huge. Like, it's a 5 to 25 power scope. And here I am trying to, like, clear corners and work this draw, and nothing is farther than, like, 20 feet. And so even at 5 power, I can, like, I'm holding, and my arms started getting tired because this gun is so heavy, and it's still, I have the bipod on it, so it's like way out front too, like front heavy. And so I don't know, what was it, an hour? I worked this entire draw all the way down to the private. Didn't even see a whisper of a deer. So I don't know where this Houdini buck went, but he just disappeared.
Mm-hmm.
So that was pretty depressing. Like, we thought it was a slam dunk.
Because you'd work that down towards the private, and then there was the other draw going north, or it would have been south, that we were like, well, he's probably in there. It was a bigger draw, and we just, I think we were getting close to lunch or something like that, so we just decided to kind of pull out for now and try to come back in the evening and either do that or try to find a new area. And I think...
Well, that's when we found that group of... What was it, four brothers from, like, Louisiana or some way off place? So there's four guys tenting it from middle. I mean, I don't think they were all from the same state, but none of them were even close to Montana.
Right.
And they had, I think it was like a Toyota Tundra or something, but this thing was packed to the gills with all their camping gear and their tents. But what we noticed was they had four... skinned out bucks, like €4 in camp laying there. And so like, we're like, we have to stop and talk to them. Like, they're tagged out. They're clearly packing up. Like, maybe they'll give us some intel. So we talked to them. They're super nice guys. They seem like they shot I think there was a yearling, and then there's like maybe a couple 2-year-olds, and then maybe like 1 3-year-old. So nothing crazy, but they were tagged out. And so we started talking to them, and they said, yeah, we went all the way around to this like crazy spot way back, right? Like they were way back in there, and we shot $3 last night. And we're like, are you serious? Like we've been hunting all week, and we haven't even seen $3 on private. And you guys shot $3 in one night? And they're like, yeah, but dude, like it's been tough for us too. Like we're probably not coming back for a few years. And so we, yeah, like you said, we decided to go out, grab some lunch, and it's like, well, we might as well hit this spot that apparently is loaded with deer.
Right.
So.
Yeah, that turned into a nice long hike, that's for sure.
I remember that was such a long, well, just the drive, like, anyone that's hunted the mountains knows that mountain roads suck, but for the, like, it wasn't like we were in the mountains, like, we were in the hills, like, southeast Montana's more of the hills, but it still took us, like, an hour and a half to get back to the spot, probably 2 hours at least back to camp.
Yeah.
We park in the spot, it looks good, right? It looks remote, looks like there's plenty of habitat, we walked up on all the bucks they shot, the gut piles, but it basically turned into 4 miles of us like splitting up and just
I think you saw a doe.
I actually had a spike, a real small spike, four-inch spike at 15 feet. He was so close that I put my crosshair on him and I couldn't see anything but his front shoulder. I clicked my safety off and I'm just looking at him and I'm just really thinking like, do I want to shoot this or not? And I'm playing the scenarios through my head. I'm like, it would be meat. It'd probably be the best mule deer meat because he's a young buck.
Right.
I don't feel like I need to shoot a big buck, but it's like, it's not like the ego is not going to let me shoot this because it's not big enough. But at the same time, I was like, I also don't need to shoot a little buck. And if I shoot this tonight, then I'm signing Bryce up for a lot of work. We're going to be here a while. We got to quarter it, pack it all. Like it's going to be a super late night. And then, you know, that's probably going to spill into tomorrow morning. Probably won't get the earliest start. And so I let him go. I mean, we introduced each other. I heard this deer's life story. Like, that's how long the spike stood in front of me that I was watching in my scope. And we did some miles in that spot.
Right.
I don't know. I think I was at like 5 or 6 miles just in that one spot alone.
Yeah, I'm sure I was probably pretty close to the same. And I think the worst part was towards the end of the hunt that day, seeing the vehicles driving through the canyon roads and stuff. And we're just sitting there like, well, we really can't get away from anything. I mean, we're literally 2.5, maybe 2 hours from camp. And it's just still have people driving by. I think there was a UTV that flew by at one point. It's like,
and you're talking like,
what do we have to do?
People driving off road, like where we were told and like where the rules say you're not supposed to drive. And there's still people driving around. And that's when we were really like, we're trying to play it by the book. We didn't go off road. And here's people just driving everywhere they want to drive.
Yeah, at that point, it was pretty demoralizing just seeing all the pressure everywhere. Everywhere we went, it's just mounting up until we hit day 4, that's for sure.
Day 4 was our last prayer. We had a cold front. At this point, we had fixed the heater in the camper. It ran out of propane, and the morning of day 3 was a chilly start. It was the opposite of day 1. Day 1, I woke up in a puddle of sweat. Day 3, I was froze. And I had a warm sleeping bag, so I was doing all right. But I remember you had a lot of faith in the heater because you had, like, 2 really light blankets.
Yeah, the heater, the dang propane valve was leaking and went empty on us. So that was something that was unexpected. That, I mean, this is the camper that we had been camping in for the last 2 years. And, I mean, we probably spent, 45 nights using the heater. And so we never had that issue going into the trip. So it's one of those unexpected things that you just, especially that one, you don't really like to find out.
Yeah, I will say there's something weird. Like there's a weird feeling when you go on a Western hunt and someone else is bringing like the trailer or the camper. because you're like, yeah, I got the camper, I'll bring the camper. And you, I mean, I've seen it before. I knew what you had. It, you know, you bought it, it was a little older, it was a great deal. It was a project camper. Mm-hmm. You guys have flipped it, turned it into an amazing hunting rig, but it's still like, what, a 2001 camper?
Yeah, it is a 98.
And so I'm like, I don't want to like be overbearing, but I'm like, you know, when was the last time you looked at the bearings and, you know, how are the tires look? And I'm not trying to ask all these questions because it's like, I have no idea.
I did go through them.
Yeah. Luckily we did about everything else on that road out, but we didn't break any tires, which is phenomenal. My dad just bought a brand new fifth wheel, by the way, a little tangent, brand new 2023 tire exploded taking it to the resort. Like, this thing has zero miles on it, and the tire, like, catastrophic explosion. Like, the whole rubber just, boom. Yeah.
That's crazy.
So, I guess my logic doesn't necessarily make sense, because the new ones popped too, but I that was a little bit nerve-wracking for me. It's probably the opposite, like, man, this guy thinks he knows everything. He's got the spot figured out. I have no idea what we're getting myself into, but I got the camper, you know? So.
Got something.
Yeah. Day four comes, we got a cold front, we have calm weather, we are both like, let's just see if we can get one on the ground today. That's the goal of the day, is to get one on the ground.
Right.
We get there super early, we break up. I go south, you go north, or I think, I don't know, I guess I don't even know which directions the roads were. You know, you went one way, I went the other. I had seen some bucks, I glassed some bucks, or not bucks, deer. And it was kind of like these mounds. I don't know. There's mounds everywhere. So I'd see like, I'd see them go through a gap, but then I'd have to run down and run up and run down to see them again. Turns out they were all does. That's a bummer. So I run around for a few hours chasing does and don't have any luck. So I'm going to head back to the truck, see what Bryce has been up to. So I walk up. You beat me to the truck.
So I had a little bit of different morning that day. Just to give you a little background, we went back basically to that spot that we had bumped that injured deer on day three. And I kind of set up on, well, it was the ridge that I bumped him off of. And I just set up right there. I'm like, you know, if he's still in the area from this point, I should be able to at least see him. If not, I mean, I could see out, you know, a mile pretty much any direction except for, I think, back to the east. So I could see north, west, and south pretty well. And then I had that little draw area, too, that I was kind of able to see down into. And that area ended up being the ticket then. It was kind of a slow morning right away. And then all of a sudden, I think sun came up, and it was just, I mean, I was glassing like probably 15 deer down in this draw, and I could see one was a pretty good buck. And so I'm all excited. I got my gun, get backpack loaded back up, and I started walking out, heading over towards him, because I think I was 12 or 1300 yards away. So quite a ways. And so I actually get down, I work my way off the ridge, and I'm walking kind of on flat ground towards the little ravine area, and I'm walking over towards him, and I actually get into a foot race with two other hunters that are probably about 1,000 yards behind me. And they were coming, they saw this buck, and they were coming the whole way with me and still way behind. And
were those the guys from, the point on like that, the road? They parked on the road.
Yep. They parked on the road.
I think they were going off
away the deer.
I think they were going off a different buck. Yeah, I think they were going after. I had seen a buck on your side of the road, and I figured, like, okay, I've been watching this buck for a half hour now. I thought you were going to go shoot him, but I can't see you, and this buck's still standing there. It's been a half hour, so Bryce must not be going after him. So I'll go after him. So I run. I'm working my way as fast as I can. I get down in the bottom of the cut so I don't have to worry about getting seen. I get to the road. I'm like 100 yards from the road, and that truck rolls up, stops right in front of me. They don't see me. They get out on their side and go after that buck. So it sounds like they might not have been going after the same one as you. Maybe they were.
So I think what happened was that initially they were going after that other buck.
Okay.
And then they got up to that ravine and they didn't really check it, but they could see the buck that was dogging the doe that I was going after. And so then they ended up just jumping ship and actually trying to foot race me or something.
So they could clearly see you.
Oh, 100%. I'm out there blaze orange, everything, walking on top of the ravine, walking right to the buck, and they just kept walking. So I don't know if they were trying to spook him or trying to get the second shot if I didn't drop him. But anyways, I mean, I glassed him, or I ranged him actually after I had shot, and they were 500 yards from me, still working the direction that buck was in. But I mean, I had already shot him and got him.
How far of a shot was your buck at?
I think it was just under 200 yards. I had to cross the ravine to get like to where they kind of were at, because the ravine kind of got funky down in that area where it kind of branched into like a bunch of different channels. And so I had crossed from the one side over, came up kind of in this like middle ravine island, and no sooner I saw the buck and the doe, and they were actually coming towards me initially. And it was a good thing that buck was dogging that doe, because I no longer got the tripod set up and put the gun on, and the doe kind of, and she silhouetted me because the sun was coming up behind me. And so she turns off the one way and he's still following her, you know, 15 feet behind her. And I got on him and I think he stopped for a split second, and I ended up taking, this buck right here. So nothing crazy, nice little 2-year-old, but I mean, I was more than happy to take after the hunting that we had and the pressure that we were seeing everywhere and the drought conditions. I mean, it was definitely nice to get on something finally and have him go down. So
I got
from that point.
Yeah. So I get back to the truck. Bryce is standing there and I can tell he's like trying to fight back a shit eating grin. And so I'm thinking, like, something in my gut just, like, and you were doing a pretty good job. I mean, you can keep a pretty straight face when you want to.
Right.
Like, and that's kind of your sense of humor. And so, but something in my gut told me, just, like, the way you were standing and, like, walking around told me, like, did he shoot something? But it's dead calm. Dead calm. And we're not that far apart. I'm like, I didn't hear a single shot this morning. There's no way. And I'm like, did you shoot? And you go, no. And I'm like, oh, really? And then he threw a empty shell at me, and I'm like, you did shoot. And you're like, yeah, he's down. I'm like, no shit. So you're like shelling me where he is. And I'm like, are you sure he's not on private? And he's like, and you're like, no, he's not on private. And I'm like, all right. So we start walking, and you're bringing me in there, and I'm looking at my Onyx, and I'm like, we are getting very, very close to private.
Right.
And sure enough, he had shot him, 20 yards into the public. And then he toppled down a hill and landed, 2 feet on the private line?
Yeah, like, just barely.
And so you're getting ready to take pictures and stuff. I'm like, Bryce, we really need to pull this buck over here, 10 feet. And you're like, really? You think so? And I'm like, I mean, yeah, let's just do it, just to be safe, right? So we pull the buck over. We take the pictures. I think as we were taking pictures, two guys walk up to us.
Yeah,
and I'm like, oh, shit. Like, we are so close to the private. I know what this they're walking up to us from the private. And we're like, I know what this conversation's going to be. And you're like, what do we want to do? And I'm like, I'll handle it. So they come up, and I felt like they came a little hot and heavy on the questioning, right? Like, you guys know you're on private? And I had instantly said, no, you're on private. We're on public. And I said, the line is right here. And he goes, huh? And I looked at my, I pulled him up my phone, and I'm like, see, this is us. This is you. Here's the line. And they immediately changed their tune. They're like, oh, well, just nice to know you guys are doing it the right way. We've had a lot of problems. And I mean, then they're like our best friends. But,
you could see the public signs too on both sides of the ravine and the hill that I had shot him off of. It was pretty clear that it was right on public. And
yeah,
so it was nice to see that they changed their demeanor and everything. They were all happy, and they hadn't seen much for, for deer activity. I think they'd been there a couple days because this was their lease that they were hunting.
Yeah.
And so it was, I mean, they came over, checked the deer out. They were, I mean, happy for us. And so it was nice to see that. But
yeah,
it was definitely an interesting experience, that's for sure.
Yeah. So after that, we did the quartering. We did the gutless method, which I think is the first time you had ever seen it. I've been telling you and Jeff for like 2 years at this point, like, when you guys shoot these bucks way back in here, you guys should just do the gutless method and not have to mm-hmm. carry them out on your back a half a mile. So what did you think of how that, like, the gutless method and the quartering and packing them out went compared to, like, dragging whitetails? Because you guys have shot whitetails farther away from the truck than that buck died.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, that was – I mean, we were back to the truck. We were a mile from the truck, and after we had them quartered out and everything, we walked back to the truck in not even a half hour. So if you're going to try to drag a deer with your gun, your pack, all that stuff, we might have left – I think we did leave the guns in the truck, or maybe I did. But, yeah, it's definitely a lot easier than dragging them. I'll say that much.
And that would have been the perfect ground to drag a buck.
Right.
Yeah.
You don't even know the weight's there. So that was nice to, I mean, it was similar to how we'd basically skin them out once we did get them back to the garage and get them strung up. But yeah, it was just a little different going to kind of the sockets and getting them off of the each limb, basically off of the socket that it's in and stuff.
Yeah.
But
yeah, it I mean, I shot a whitetail one time 300 yards. He died 300 yards on the road. I mean, flat, just like that same stuff we were hunting in. I could see my mm-hmm. truck, it's right there, and I just, like, you know what, I could drag this thing 300 yards. And but then I got to load it into my truck, and that's not easy to load a buck into a truck by yourself. And then mm-hmm. I gotta gut it anyway. That's work. And then if I get it home, I'm going to have to take care of all this stuff. And, you know, we lived in the cities at that point, like the Fargo area. You know, it's not like mm-hmm. I just got like a farm out back where I can dump stuff. You know, so that's going to be a mess. I'm like, I'm just going to quarter it mm-hmm. and carry it 300 yards instead of drag it. And, man, so much easier. And then that day, what I thought was super cool is we had your buck loaded up, and it was like, what, 9:30, 10 a.m.?
Yeah, I think it was 10 o'clock, and we... Well, let's go into town, grab a little bite to eat, nice little lunch, victory lunch, and come back out. Since, I mean, when we headed back to town, we were seeing deer everywhere, and this was totally different. I mean, this was midday. I mean, typically during the midday when we drive around, we weren't seeing anything for deer, public or private.
Yeah, because I think we loaded up the truck, we were kind of like, man, we did it. We shot a buck. Successful trip, like, you know, let's go get some lunch. And then, you know, I think we were kind of wondering, like, should we just head back and pack up, because we're still 2 hours away from camp.
Mm-hmm.
And then we started seeing deer everywhere. Like, this there was something different about this day. You know, like everyone says, the rut was on, the cold front came, the weather was right, mm-hmm. the deer were moving. And so we're like, you were both like, I don't care what you do, I'm tagged out, like, I'm good either way,
right?
Your girlfriend already had said, stay as long as you want to fill your tag, mm-hmm. which is, I've never had that instruction before. I've never been given that. So you were like, I'm good, man. Whatever you want to do, I'm good. And I'm like, dude, I feel like it's a special day. Like, and we don't have to technically leave until morning. Mm-hmm. So what if we just went back out? There's a couple spots I wanted to check. I think the group of four had given us a couple spots that they were seeing some stuff in. And so the mm-hmm. whole lunch, I'm looking at the map. And I'm like, dude, I think we can drive this road. I think there's a little road here we can take, and we can just glass. Like, we'll just run fast, and the first buck we see, we'll shoot.
Mm-hmm.
And you're like, sounds good to me, man. I don't, you know, like, I could tell the pressure was off at that point for you.
Right.
And so the bar that we slept at, or the bar, not the bar we slept in, the bar we were eating lunch in had some real big mule deer on the wall. So that probably didn't help us either. And so what was it? We get to that spot. It's right across the road from where you shot your buck. It's the same exact area we've been seeing all these deer. Saw that big one. we get to the first little spot, and I'm like, hey, let's just pop over and see if there's anything here. And I feel like you were like, dude, we didn't even we didn't go anywhere. Like, we're still by the main road. What are you doing?
5 mile road, and we're 200 yards into it. Well, let's go check it out, I suppose.
And I
may as well.
I think I walked out there, and I was a little ahead of you, and I brought the binos up and just hit the deck. Right? Just lay down instantly. And you're like, are you serious? And I'm like, dude, there's a buck over there. It's got to be a buck. Like, the way it's laying.
Mm-hmm.
And then you came out with the, like, monster spotting scope because you had your tripod and all set up. And you're like, I think your words were, that's the biggest buck we've seen this entire trip.
Yep.
And I'm like, seriously? And you're like, dude, that thing's a toad. And so I look at it, and I'm like, holy shit, like, that is a good buck.
Mm-hmm.
The problem was, he was bedded at the complete top of a hill, way out in this valley, with nothing around him in any direction. The only way to come at him without line of sight was to come at him directly upwind, and you would have got scented immediately.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm like, well, I think I'm going to go this way and crawl around and just see how close I can get. And you're like, sweet, I'll just stay here with the spotter and I will, I'll just watch him, you know, I'll just, you know, hang out. And so I take off. I met some hunters. And I'm like, hey, can you guys like not drive this road and blow this deer out for me? That'd be sweet. And I think they listened for like 10 minutes and then took off anyway. So
yeah, maybe 10 minutes.
And luckily the buck didn't jump. I work my way down. I think you were, what, 750, 800 yards from him while you were watching him?
Yeah, somewhere in there. Yep.
And the closest I can get before I start running out of cover is like 600 yards. I go up here, 600. I walk down a little bit. Like, I keep running out. There's no cover. It's just a burnt pasture. I mean, this was a putting green. And so I finally get to the best I can, and I start crawling. And this buck is sleeping. I got my scope turned all the way up. His eyes are closed.
Mm-hmm.
He had moved. You had seen him move. And so now, by this point, you know exactly which buck this is, but I still have no clue.
Mm-hmm.
And his eyes are closed. And I thought, as long as his eyes are closed, I'll crawl across this dance floor. But if he opens his eyes, I mean, I'm out in the wide open. This ain't going to work.
Mm-hmm.
So as soon as he opens his eyes, I'm going to shoot him or try to shoot him. And sure enough, about 10 feet later, he opens his eyes, and I only made it to 498. And I'm like, well, it's the last day. The wind is pretty good. I got a solid range on him. He's bedded down. This is why I built this rifle. It's a long-range chassis rifle. This is why I did it. It's why I put the scope on there. I might as well try. And so I did my best. I dial for the elevation. I look and I try to guess the wind, and I dial for the wind. Try to control the breathing. Whack. And the reason I built this rifle and wanted it heavy with that muzzle brake is so that I could hopefully reduce the recoil enough to track my own shots or at least see the dust cloud, which worked great. What didn't work great was my first shot. You know, I see the dust cloud about 6 inches above his butt, and I'm like, ooh, that's not good. And I'm like, well, that I don't really get the behind it. Like, the up and down should have been perfect, because this is low elevation. I mean, I've been shooting all summer long. I don't get why the up and down was off, but I can adjust for the left and right pretty easy. So I measure it with my scope. I move over. I shoot again. Once again, find the dust cloud. Well, now it's perfect left and right, but it's still like, you know, now it's like 2 inches over his back. And I'm like, that just doesn't make sense. But I'm thinking, he's not moving. He's still laying there. The shots are tracking exactly how I've been measuring them. So I'm like, well, I might as well just adjust the elevation for what I'm actually seeing. And so I do two more MOA, dial it in. Last shot, I shoot. And this time I'm trying to get back on him. And I he's gone. Like, I don't know what's happening. Well, he stood up. And I'm like, oh, no. Did I hit him? Or what's going on? And then he, like, takes one wobble step and just dumps. Oh, no, he stood up and his back leg was broken.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, oh, no, I shot him in the back leg. Like, this is terrible. I wounded him. Well, it turns out it's the same broken leg buck that Bryce jumped the day before and ran down the Sahara. And so he stands up, takes one wobble step, and just dumps in his bed. And then it was like a geyser of blood pumping out of his heart. Like I, on the third shot, 10 ringed him. Man, was that a good feeling to like this whole kind of, it kind of a disaster train of a hunt wraps up and we double up and it's still early. Like it's what, 2:30, 3 o'clock in the afternoon.
Oh, we were definitely, I mean, we were on the road before sunset and we were an hour plus from going back to the camper and getting everything loaded up and getting back on the road. So yeah, it was like 2 or 3 o'clock in the afternoon.
Yeah. I mean, like you said, we ate lunch, we got back to our spot, we only went 200 yards off the road, and we found the first buck. And so you walk up to me, and you're like, dude, I got it all on film. And I'm like, what? I'm like, I was recording the entire time. And I'm like, dude, I was gone for 45 minutes. And you're like, yeah, I know, I got a lot of video on my phone.
Got it, though.
Bryce got the shot. Cameraman Bryce got the shot. He also instantly told me, if you ever try to tell someone you 10 ringed us on the first shot, I got the proof that you didn't. So
yeah,
we got that guy quartered up. He wasn't, you know, he was the biggest buck we saw that whole trip, but he still wasn't like anything special. He was a probably what we said 2 or 3 year old buck, but just a drought buck, just didn't get his good forks and stuff.
Yeah, I think he had one little baby fork and that was it.
Yeah, he's out in the garage right now. I still haven't euroed him, but we got him quartered up pretty fast. It was only like 700 yard pack back to the truck. And we get back to the truck and we're like, we look at each other like, should we rock it all the way home tonight? Get home early? And we're like, let's just get back, get the camp loaded up and just get on the road a little bit. And if it gets late, we'll just find a Walmart and pull over and sleep. So we get loaded up. We kind of mess up to get into our actual campsite, we had to go through like a ditch. And so we had to get a little creative to get the camper out of that. And then, oh my gosh, that road on the way out is like the worst. It's like the worst good looking road you've ever seen, where it's like a gravel road, maintained, houses on it. You think you could fly and it's just terrible.
Washboard all over. And yeah.
So we'd stop at the highway and get underneath it and check the damage. I think one jack got a little bent. We opened up the door. Things were rattled around all over the place. And we get on the road, and I don't know. How did you feel when we were, like, headed out? Like, what would that feel like after doubling up on the last day, like, right down to the wire on your first Western hunt?
I mean, there's probably no feeling out there like it. Just, I mean, having as discouraging of a hunt that I've ever had. I mean, I've had some pretty rough ones, and, like, I've hunted spots where, you know, the farmers are out there messing up your hunt. And I mean, sometimes on purpose, sometimes not on purpose, either way, it's still frustrating. But like this one was just with the drought, the hunting pressure, the fact that, I mean, everything all accumulated up together. It was pretty just gratifying. I mean, we doubled on the same, it was nice too that we caught back up with that injured deer just to, you know, take care of him, because I mean, I guess you didn't get to see him too much for walking, but it was him walking was literally almost on two legs is how slow he was.
Yeah.
I mean, it was a limp, like he couldn't do much. So it was nice to have that be the one that we caught back up with, and just the fact that we doubled on the same on the last day, it was one of those hunts you kind of dream of. I mean, it wasn't anything for trophy type mule deer, but I he's still on the wall, so I still call him a trophy.
it was a trophy amount of effort, no matter how you slice it.
Right.
I feel like that hunt was the perfect, like, textbook definition of like a roller coaster of a Western hunt, with like all the excitement leading up to it, thinking we're going to see lots of deer. Hopefully we're going to be able to pick through a couple bucks. You know, that's what everyone would love to do, is like pick through a couple bucks, find a good one, go after him, kill him. We get there, you know, peak excitement, first day, we're seeing a buck, and then like immediately crashes down for like 2.5 days of just a disappointment after disappointment. Thinking like we're not going to shoot anything, like you know, at one point we're like, we're not going to, this isn't going to happen. And then that last day it just skyrockets, shoot one right out of the bat, load it up by 10 a.m. You know, can it get any better? 200 yards after lunch, another one, you know, loaded him up by 3 p.m. And
it was a roller coaster.
And we're headed home early. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Rocked it all night long. What was it, like 10 hours? Did we say 10, 12 hours?
Sounds about right. I think we got back, what, like 3 in the morning or so?
Yeah, 3, 4 a.m. We got that 1 hour time change that hit us hard, or, you know, hurt us on the way back. Yeah, I think it would have been 3 a.m., but then that time change. Right. Which, like.
No, we got back in time for you to get a little breather and head to the cities the next day, so.
Well, I don't know if I really got a breather. I went to bed at 4 a.m., woke up at 7 a.m., unpacked the truck, and left.
I mean, you made it.
Yeah, I made it. I certainly did. Yeah. So, but yeah, that was a crazy hunt. I can't, I don't know if I would be able to replicate that one if I tried.
No, and for that being my first Western hunt, like I said, that wasn't the biggest mule deer that I've ever seen, or obviously YouTube will ruin you if you take an hour and watch, you know, Montana mule deer hunts, but that in itself was, I mean, more gratifying than I could have imagined, I guess, for my first time out there and first time even mule deer hunting. I was more successful than a lot of my whitetail hunts. So,
yeah, when you really think about it, for 4 days of hunting to shoot 2 bucks, I mean, that doesn't happen very often, even if you have your own private land.
Right.
So,
I mean, you were saying that you guys hadn't, like, wasn't your best success rate like 50% or something when you gone? Granted, it was with like three or four guys.
But on archery elk, it was 50% was our best out in the West. Wow. We've done, the year before that, I did a hunt where we went 6 for 6 with rifles. We shot 3 antelope and 3 mule deer. But yeah, it's tough. I mean, there's no way two ways about it. It's tough. So
right.
I was just happy to like get you on success, because like you never want to be the guy that's like, oh, come out west with me, it'll be a great time, and then it turns into a disaster.
Right. But no, that was definitely fun. Good trip all around.
Yeah, I remember when you showed up to my house to leave, you were wearing muck boots, and I'm like, you did bring different boots, right? And you're like, oh yeah, these, it's just because it's snowing. Like, I'm like, oh, thank God.
Got the Danners.
Yeah. So I'm pretty sure I know already that you would go west again. If I messaged you next year and said, hey, you want to go back to Southeast Montana? What would you say?
I mean, I wouldn't totally be opposed. it was definitely work, and going for the second time, I'm not opposed to any type of hunt, I guess. So it was challenging, it was rewarding, it was everything you look for in a hunt. So I don't know if they've bounced back at all from their drought, but yeah, like I say, I'm not opposed to anything at this point. I like going out on those trips anyways. So
yeah, that last day of success really has a way of changing the whole lens about, you know. So, yeah, we'll have to plan another one here soon, and hopefully this time Jeff's a little bit more available, got some of those projects at the farm done, save up, we can hit him on the right year and get him to come with us, and if nothing else, just have a pack mule.
Right. Come on, Jeff.
So, but I do think he would love it out there. I think he would enjoy it.
Oh, he definitely would. I think anybody would. If they don't, they're crazy.
There you go. You heard it here first. If you don't love hunting the West, you're crazy. So.
Yeah.
So, man, just like that, Bryce, we've went a little over an hour already.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess how long do you usually go on these podcasts? I don't even know.
Typically an hour. About an hour. Yeah. But when you get into a good story, then it's all off the rails. But yeah, I do appreciate you hopping on and sharing that story, kind of giving everyone that's listening to this. I mean, there'd probably be 4,000 or 5,000 people listening to this. Just kind of a perspective of what it can be like on your first hunt. You know, kind of a little of everything. Mm-hmm. That's probably what most people's first hunt's going to be. Lots of excitement. then you kind of get disappointed and you got to kind of grind through that middle part of it. And then hopefully a little luck, you come out on top like yourself and like we did on that last day. So it's a pretty,
I'd say definitely set your expectations, you know, middle of the pack, and don't go in watching too much YouTube any days in advance. But yeah, no, it's definitely, if you're going for your first time, it's more for the experience than anything anyways. I mean, if you never go, you'll never know. So
there you go.
That's what I'd say.
Really can't say it better than that. Can't say it better than that at all. So I think that's about as good a spot as any to wrap that episode up, and we'll have to do it again sometime. So we'll find a way to get out there again and have another podcast to tell the story.
Sounds good. Yeah.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, thanks for being here, Bryce. Good to catch up with you. Hopefully I can get up to Fargo again soon and hang out, see everybody, and look forward to another season.
If you're not too busy on your farm.
If I'm not too busy. Yeah, I'm going to be the new Jeff. So.
Yeah. Well, let me know if you need any help with any projects. I lent a hand a couple times at the other farm. So.
All right. I might take you up on that offer. But. Yeah, thanks for being here, and thank you for listening, folks.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.